Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Miss something from the Todd Feinberg Show? Don't stress. Listen to the podcast at WTIC.com or on the free Odyssey app.
It's WTIC. Good afternoon. Todd with you. Oh, what a mess the world is. But that's what happens when you put people in it, you know? We're going to try to straighten it out this afternoon, as we do every afternoon, clarify what the problems are and what the solutions are. Joining us now, talk about what's going on at college campuses, what's happening in the Middle East. It's a big story. It's not one we have firsthand experience with, really, as Americans. We just don't know that much about the Middle East. We certainly spend a lot of money there supporting Israel and take a lot of risk supporting Israel. But they're our ally. We've supported them for a long time. And yet there are others, there are people here who want us supporting the Palestinians as well. And that makes life kind of complicated politically. Joining us to talk about it is Tamina De Bozorgi. She is a student, law student at George Washington University Law School. She comes to us via Young Voices. Tamina, thank you for being here again.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us what's going on right now with the concern for Palestinians and how we weigh that against concern for Israel and also maintaining peace in the Middle East.
Well, this is a historical war that has been going on in different shapes and forms, and we see culminations of it almost like a volcano erupting once a while in the region. And what is really interesting about the Israel-Palestine conflict is that it has become a proxy battleground between some of the other players in the region that want to fight with the United States, pretty much. So what you're seeing right now might look like this is a battle between Israel and Palestine, but what it actually is, it's a battle between United States, Western bloc, and still Russian allies, the Eastern bloc. So Palestine is not alone in this fight. They're actually being supported and funded by regimes such as the Islamic Republic of Iran, which also funds Hezbollah. And on the other side, you see the United States supporting our allies, Israel. And you see some Arab nations that fall on both sides of this fight. So that's why this is a very complicated situation.
So let me go back to this idea of a proxy war, because I think it gelled in my mind in a way it hadn't before. We hear that phrase all the time. It gets used on a regular basis, proxy war. And I think of that as meaning that somebody is fighting, like somebody wants to harm us in some way or send us a message. They can do that by attacking an ally of ours, say, and that's a proxy war. But it sounds like it's even a bigger thing, that the role of a third party player as a proxy, i.e. attacking Israel as a message to the United States, that can become their primary identity in the eyes of the people causing conflicts. So they're not really concerned about the Israelis. They're concerned about us.
Yeah, I think it can be both. In this instance, we know that Iran sees Israel as a major geopolitical threat. and also Iran being a fundamentalist Islamist government that has no regard for human life, has no regard for freedom. They see Israel being a pro-democracy, more liberal country as also an ideological threat in the region. And that also applies to other players in the area. A lot of Arab countries also see Israel being a geopolitical threat to themselves, which is, again, separate from our alliance with Israel and their problems with us. So I think when you put all these factors together, if you get a clear picture of what is actually going on, unfortunately, we see that most of those countries, Iran, you know, the Iranian people, for example, have no say in how their government approaches this war. I mean, the Iranian people actually do not support the Islamic Republic, and they have been supporting the Israeli people in this war, as we can see in protests and also on social media. But because those countries, like, for example, the Islamic Republic of Iran is not a democratic nation, the people cannot really influence what the government is doing.
Did you say the Iranian people are supporting Israel?
Yes. Yeah, so predominantly, especially the diaspora community outside of Iran has been very outspoken in support of Israel. Iran and Israel have been natural allies for many years since the early 20th century, because Iran used to have the largest Jewish population in the Middle East. And ever since, I mean, this has existed. And since the Islamic Republic took over, they have been very supportive of Hamas, and other terrorist organizations have posed a threat to Israel. And that's mostly because, you know, the ideological differences and problems with the United States. But you see that the Iranian people have continued supporting Israel in many ways because of that historical alliance, and also having a lot of cultural and, you know, a lot of Iranians have family in Israel. So that's why the Iranian people have been very outspoken and supportive of Israel.
So is your background from the region?
Yes, I was born and raised in Iran. I lived there till 2015 when I moved to the United States to seek freedom, fulfill the American dream. So I've actually spent more than 18 years in Iran, and I've seen how the country has fallen into destitute in the hands of the Islamic Republic regime.
So can you, I guess, try to bring us closer to what it would feel like to know people in Iran and to understand what the Iranian motivations are? You're talking about a really there being no connection between what the people want and what the government does behavior wise. Is that right?
Yes. And that is the problem with authoritarianism, because the cost benefit analysis doesn't add up. The cost bearers of the actions of a government are always the people. And when they are not the ones that are also getting the benefit or are not impacting the decisions, you see that people suffering great harm. And we see that also in Palestine. I mean, Hamas is not a democratic government. Many Palestinians might not even support them, but they have been victims of Hamas's actions by, you know, supporting acts of terrorism. So, and it's the same situation in Iran. I mean, Iranian people are aware that their government is not a friendly government to humankind. The Islamic Republic has killed many Iranians inside of Iran, including women and children, for simply not wearing a headscarf. And so people are aware of that. However, when you have a population that doesn't have guns, cannot defend itself against authoritarianism, they end up in a situation like this where they suffer a great deal.
Tamina Dobozorgi is our guest. She's a student at George Washington University School of Law. A last year law student, I believe. I guess that means soon to be a practicing American lawyer. Is that right?
Yes, I am graduating in a couple weeks.
Congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Thank you.
And what will you do? You feel some kind of responsibility to your home country in terms of changes you might be able to affect? Or how do you view your mission now that you're a fully realized, you've got a fully realized American opportunity?
As an American, I am always supportive of Americans' interests and what is best for the United States. And I believe having a free Iran is also in the best interest of the United States geopolitically, just like it used to be back in before 1979. And I believe my duty as an American is also educating Americans, especially young people, on dangers of losing your freedom, dangers of authoritarianism that can happen. I mean, Iran used to be a progressive liberal nation and was moving towards that direction. However, we saw what happened in 1979 when Iranian people lost their freedoms. And here we are 40 years later. Iran is no longer a prosperous country as it used to be. And I think there's a lot to be learned here. I think our founding fathers really saw the dangers of such a system of governance, and that's why they came up with this brilliant system in our Constitution. So, and
well,
I also believe...
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to keep you focused on that part. So if you look at our founding fathers and as brilliant as they were, I agree with you. They also, I think, realized that what they were handing off to the people to carry forward into posterity, that it was precarious. And we don't treat it like it's precarious. We treat it like it's stable and locked in place. And yet, for me, when I look at us, and I think a lot of people feel this way, you look at America today and it's not what it was intended to be. We now have a huge centralized bureaucratic government that squanders ridiculous amounts of money, like totally squanders. We have been in the post-World War II era the most productive wealth-creating country in the history of mankind, and all that wealth is gone. And it's not just that we're broke, but we're in debt, trillions and trillions of dollars. And now our politics seems taken over by a mentality of the government should just give us money. And the government does just give us money, even if the money doesn't exist, and it means running up our debt higher. So how do you look at all that and jibe that with what you know America is supposed to be?
Well, the United States is not an autocracy. We have democratic and also undemocratic checks on the power. And I believe our duties as voters, as Americans, is to actually hold our decision makers and our leaders accountable. We have the power to do that. I mean, people in Iran literally cannot do that. There's no democratic levers. And that's why the founders wanted to make sure that, you know, if it's a republic, if you can keep it, and our duty is to ensure that. And even if that means getting rid of a politician or a district that is not fiscally conservative, does not respect the government, does not respect the Constitution, that duty falls on us as voters. Maybe we shouldn't vote for a president who has no regard for national security and sacrifices wokeness over America's interests. And as voters, I think we should pay more attention to that. And that's why I tell young people to pay attention, take their lessons in civics and history seriously, because it has happened in the past and it can happen.
But Tamina, what is the difference between our system of government and, say, the Iranian government, if the goal of a government is to be able to have endless amounts of power and to be able to use that power and the finances of the nation any way they see fit? The Iranian leaders get to do that through their sheer belligerence and disregard for democratic principles. And our government has just figured out how to trick us into thinking that having a form of government that isn't ours is just fine. So I agree with you that the infrastructure is still in place, that were we to seize it and take control of our country back, that we could do that. But I don't know that people are sophisticated enough to understand what's happened to us and to realize the need to do that.
But as you said, that's not a problem with the system that our founders have put in place, which exists today. It's a problem with the personnel, and personnel is always policy. So if you want to effectuate policy, you have to fix your personnel and make sure they actually respect with those values. And that's why we have those democratic levers in our Constitution.
Yes, but since they depend on us to operate them, and we don't hold up our end of the bargain. And so given that we don't hold up our end of the bargain, and now the ruling class tricks us into thinking things aren't as they are, as they were constructed, that we shouldn't be turning our noses at the idea of being given things by the federal government. And instead, we've been adapted to this new idea where they should just give us as much as we want. And in return, we let them do what they want. And I feel like that's becoming our de facto system of government.
And I see that a lot of young people have been subscribing to that idea. And I always tell them when the government wants to take away your economic power, that's how you also lose your social freedom. That's exactly what happened in Iran, where governments promised free things and wanted to give people free things. And over time, they had to take over the market, and they did. And that's how people lost their social freedoms. I mean, the Islamic Republic leaders didn't come telling women that we are going to force you to wear a headscarf. We kill you if you don't. We're not going to let you go to college. They didn't come saying that. They said free healthcare, free college, free buses, free utilities. And a lot of people fell for that. And I think there's definitely a danger there when people fall for false promises of politicians that that use that as a Trojan horse to effectuate policies that turn around its head. So that's why our work at Dissident Project is very important. We go to high schools and we talk to students about our life experience living in those countries where that scenario had actually played out to the fullest.
Tamina De Bozorghi is our guest, George Washington University Law School. So it sounds like you believe that America can be saved, that we can restore our system of government if we only start seeing that that is our job and to understand exactly what that job is.
Exactly. And that is the core of the principles of self-governance. It is our responsibility to do that. Nobody's going to come and save us. And we cannot expect politicians to act morally or because being in power just by its nature brings corruption. But our job as people is to make sure that we fire those people from the office by the legal means that our system has given us. And that's how we have, our country has prospered in the past 200, 300 years, given all the things we've been through as a nation. And I 100% believe that America will continue and to prosper if we continue fighting against ideas of tyranny domestically as well as foreign. And I hope that this happens because, look, I sacrificed a great deal to become an American. I left everything behind, and I have hope that my future generation will also enjoy the fruits of liberty. And that's why I take my role as an individual, as an American, very seriously to ensure that we do not fall into the hands of tyrannical rulers that want to take away what actually makes us Americans.
If we were hanging around, if we had the chance to hang around, a group of Americans and a group of Iranians and talk about our governments and learn from each other. Which group do you think is more sophisticated about the dangers of government?
I think both sides would be very well aware. I believe that Americans, even if they might not pay attention, they are, I mean, we are very skeptical. I mean, we're a generation of revolutionaries. It's kind of baked into our DNA. And I think that's what Iranians and Americans share. Unfortunately, Iran as a nation has had taken a different historical path, but I believe that there's a lot in common. I think both communities understand the dangers. Maybe Iranians have seen it more vividly. Unfortunately, they've touched it, they felt it, they've seen what can happen. But I think most Americans also are aware of that. And that's, I think it's those people that keep this country going so far.
All right, Tamina, I love your optimism. And it's exciting that you are getting out of school and will soon be able to pursue your career here and enjoy all the fruits of freedom that remain in America, and that maybe you can strengthen them.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to that as well.
Thank you so much. Tamina De Bozorghi, George Washington University law student who is graduating this year. She speaks for Young Voices. Visit youngvoices.org. Thanks so much for being here, Tamina.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. Take care. Wow. So we've got a lot to learn about our government and what's left of it, and our society and how it's structured, and our rights, and how little regard we have for them, and how much trust we have in political leaders who I think lead us astray. That's my take on it. So let us pause for news, and we can talk more about this and get into some other subjects as well as we continue. Well, do you want to call the rant line? You should, yeah. 860-751-4698 and call in live. 860-522-9842. Time for news on WTIC.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Come on. Oh, come on. Why wait? You can rant right now at 860-751-4698 on the Todd Feinberg Show.
WTIC. I'm asking those questions of Tamina because she's Iranian by birth and lived there till she was 15. She goes to GW Law. She's a American citizen now, and she's going to be working in the world. And it's interesting to get her perspective as somebody who grew up in an oppressed society. We grew up in a liberal society with democratic systems that worked, but we don't have that anymore. We have some remnants of it, and we don't know which way it's going to go. Depends on us. So I just found it intriguing to talk to her about it. George calling from Canton. Hello, George.
Well, greetings, Todd.
Good afternoon, sir.
What a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Huh? Oh, it's heaven, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, Todd, it's interesting, the guest you just had. It is. Am I correct? There's two requirements to be president of the United States. You must be born here and be over 35. Is that all there is to it?
That is the deal. Natural born citizen, okay. And 35 yeah. years of age.
Okay. You know, I'll tell you what. I'm not going to be surprised at some point with the direction that we're going about wanting to legitimize illegitimate people coming into this country by giving them all the benefits of this country. I think that maybe we should consider, I say we, that would be the correct thinking people. I'm not going to say right or left. The correct thinking people in this country. Maybe we ought to think about changing what it takes to be the president.
You want to reverse the rules so you have to be born elsewhere?
No. But if you are born elsewhere, it doesn't automatically mean you can't be president. That woman, look, we have been born here, and I'm pushing 80 now. I thought it would always be the way it was. The gold, you know, the shining city on a hill, as Reagan said. Couldn't imagine how we have we're slip sliding, as Paul Simon would say, slip sliding away. We have taken our freedoms so for granted. This young woman has paid, she said, I lost everything to come here. Who in this country has lost anything by being born here?
Or to maintain possession of their American citizenship and the rights
exactly.
that were bestowed now, upon us. That's a really interesting point, George.
Do you recognize the name Winsome Sears?
It's familiar, but tell me what it means.
She's the attorney general, or the attorney general, I think, of Virginia. Wasn't she when the new governor took over? Winsome Sears is the, I think, the attorney general.
Well, keep going. I'm looking it up.
Well, the black woman, she was a Marine, if I'm not mistaken, but she was born in either the Bahamas or Jamaica. She can't be president.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in hearing her as they were campaigning, I thought, well, now there's an American for you. Unfortunately, she wasn't born here. And look at what we have here in Congress, in the Senate, of these shreds of humanity, as Limbaugh would have said, that are against the country that elected them. And we allow them to be, I guess they can't be president. I guess they weren't born here. That's something. But my point being, there are people who are paying a heavy price to come here. I mean, when Schwarzenegger ran and became governor of California, I'm not judging whether he was good or bad. I'm not. I mean, he certainly was kind of a rhino. But Schwarzenegger could never be president. He wasn't born here.
Correct. But and your point being what?
Well, that there are people, this woman you spoke to, how hard would it be to get the correct thinking people like you and me? I think we're correct thinking people. That this woman, why wouldn't we vote for her? She understands what the American dream is all about. And yet these people coming here on a free ticket that we're paying for, they're getting for free what she paid for to be here.
Yes. Gotcha.
And it's an amazing thing that maybe we ought to consider changing what it requires to be president. You can be president if you weren't born here.
All right, George. Thank you for that. I think that that's not the point so much as that we need to learn from people like her what our responsibilities are, and that, you know, people who can be president can be president. There's lots of ways to affect change without being president, and maybe being president isn't the best way to do it. Mark's calling from Manchester next. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Todd. How's it going?
What's happening?
So remember when the Chinese, Xi Jinping visited, I think it was San Francisco, remember, pretty recently?
Yes. They did the whole makeover.
Right. Well, like maybe a month or two after that, some lady got elected, and I don't know if you see this. If I understand, like, she's not even an American citizen. She's like, they linked her back to the Chinese Communist Party, and she holds some local office there now. She got elected in, and then she gave her acceptance speech in Chinese, not even in American, not even in English.
Wow, I didn't know about it. She got elected in San Francisco to local politics?
And I think it's for like a position, something to do with immigration.
And do you view her as somebody who's like a plant, who's there to usurp Americanism and implant Chineseism into San Francisco? Or will she be somebody better than the Americans who've been getting elected?
I don't think so. From what I've seen, they're linking her back to the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, they're infiltrating this country all over the place. Did you see the thing with the illegal marijuana black market thing? It's
yes.
Like all these grows are popping up everywhere. They're flooding the country with fentanyl. I mean, you know, who knows what happened with COVID, but, and then, you know, they're letting them get away with it. They're letting these people get away with, you know, it's a slow decay, and we're watching it. We're all watching
him. Yes, I think the decay's been going on for a long time, and it's coming up on us kind of fast now because it's been growing for so long. It's a really interesting issue. A Chinese immigrant has been sworn in to serve on San Francisco's election commission, despite her lack of U.S. citizenship, raising national security concerns as one U.S. senator warns that the Chinese President Xi Jinping is playing the long game. In other words, they allow things to unfold really slowly, and that gives mm-hmm. them a lot of power. Kelly mm-hmm. Wong, an immigrants' right activist who came to the U.S. in 2019 from Hong Kong for graduate studies, was unanimously appointed by San Francisco's Board of Supervisors to the city's Elections Commission on February 14th. She is believed to be the first non-citizen ever to sit on the commission after California voters approved a measure in 2020 to eliminate the citizenship requirement to sit on San Francisco boards. So that's the that would seem to be the key building block to this whole thing. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, you see all the Chinese nationals that are coming through the border, right? I mean, they're infiltrating this country. I'm not saying some of them, they're all bad people. We're not saying that, you know. But you don't know who's in this country. And on top of it, you want to talk about the deficit that we're in. When our ancestors came here, there were no handouts. Nobody got anything for free. It was either you sink or you swim. Now people are coming here and they're like guaranteed a handout. What do you? Where's all this money coming from? I mean, the system—it's got to collapse.
Yes, but it's also that's how our system is working across the board. It's we're getting money we shouldn't be getting. You know, Americans are getting money we shouldn't be getting, and everyone's getting converted to this idea that being an American means lots of free stuff, which is not good. What's that, Mark?
I said I'm not converted yet.
Well, I know, but you know that. But if you watch what's going on in the news, and if you read interviews with voters and things like this, you just see the most amazing things. People think, like, for example, this stuff that's going on right now with the bailout of student loans. People think they have a right to have those mm-hmm. loans bailed out because they got conned into taking out bad loans. And even if that's the case, if you don't have the system punish people, in other words, have to absorb the damage they do to themselves by making bad decisions, then you create a moral hazard where people get rewarded for making bad decisions, and that becomes the expectation.
And you see it coming out in people's attitudes as well. You know, everybody's entitled. It's just, you know, you see it in society. People have really bad attitudes. Like everybody thinks they're owed something.
Yeah, which is the natural thing if the government acts like everybody's owed something. Thank you for that, Mark. Good to talk with you. 860-522-9842. Paul, hang on. We'll go to you next after a quick break. Stay with us on WTIC.
Never miss a moment. Go listen to the Todd Feinberg podcast on the Odyssey app.
Thanks for being here. It's Tuesday, WTIC. 5:40 today, Tom Scott. Tuesday is Tom Scott Day. Paul the Chemist calling from Enfield. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
So what kind of chemical reaction are you creating?
I'm hoping to create a chemical reaction to get some movement in the Republican Party and in the Republican general, because I keep hearing on every talk show, you know, what can we do? What can we do? What can we do? And what the general public is, if they object to the kinds of things going on sociologically, wokeness or gender or whatever, we're on the defensive. Everybody's on the defensive. Well, in chemistry, we analyze the problem and we solve it. We don't go on the defensive. We go on the offensive, and we need to go on the offensive. And I'll tell you, I called first to correct, not correct, but George was talking about Winsome Sears. She's the lieutenant governor of Virginia. She's not, she may have been the previous attorney general, but she's the lieutenant governor. She came in with Governor Youngkin there.
Yes.
Who won based on two things, actually, and we should pay attention in Connecticut. The second thing he won on was he went after getting out of the regional greenhouse gas initiative, which is a way to destroy the middle class, because all it has to do is you cannot generate load electricity, a lot of electricity, other than with a gas plant, a waste energy plant, and so forth. Even Bridgeport turned their coal plant as of 2008, I think. They were burning coal from other countries, believe it or not even from their own, and they turned it to a natural gas plant. They didn't put wind turbines in the middle of the ocean. But anyways, we have to go on the offensive. That SJ4 bill that came out of committee that's going to be voted on by the legislature, they want to change the language. It isn't just pregnant women. They want to change the language so that we no longer use the word abortion. Legally, we have to use the word pregnancy elimination. Okay? So if you use the word abortion, that's illegal. It's not only politically incorrect. That's the way Democrats do it. They change an issue with the language, and what they've done with the language is change morality so that it's whatever it is. And then you mentioned Kennedy Jr., Kennedy Jr. there, Robert Kennedy Jr. You said he had an interesting take on the conversation. Yeah, I like a third party or other parties or so forth. But the thing is, his take about connecting moral values to the environment, the Catholic Church has been doing that. Unfortunately, they go over a little board, and so do the environmentalists, where they connect too much morality to that and don't understand that capitalism is not that evil. Capitalism is usually like my chemistry, which is we figure out the problem and we solve it, and we don't get involved in emotions. I think this state really needs to do that. Otherwise, we're going to be financially and emotionally stressed to the limit. But thank
Paul, thank you so much. I'm going to hold you right there. I appreciate the call. 860-522-9842. A lot of good points there from Paul the chemist. But I like what Robert Kennedy, I have no objection to Robert Kennedy wanting to do the weave that I played yesterday, where he wove his feeling about protecting the environment and his religious beliefs into a form that I think everybody can understand and connect with. And I don't see that as problematic. I see that as good because, and he wasn't proposing that laws be made necessarily. And when he does, then we can discuss those laws. But what I like is that somebody's speaking to some of the what aches inside of us as a people. That was my point about Robert Kennedy Jr. And that our two-party system has so narrowed its message. The two parties, as they run for, say, the presidency like we see right now, it's so similar what they have to say. It's almost like they're doing a dance where each side knows exactly what their steps are. And there's not much that's said that's original, that resonates, that means anything to us. I want to hear people speaking with meaning. And I want us to explore those thoughts and those feelings that are going on in the country so we can understand where we're at. You know how they always talk about having a national conversation? They talk about having a national conversation like that's something they would love and they respect and that we have them. But we don't. We don't have national conversations. For example, the anti-gun people spend all their time attacking guns. They don't talk about why we have gun violence. They want us to skip that part and go straight to banning guns. But they're fraudulent when they speak about solutions. They don't know any solutions. They see a political solution. So they go for the political solution. That is, Democrats get to attack guns, and they see benefit for them in attacking guns. It's responsive to gun violence. They think they've got an answer. They feel like they've got a political answer, but they don't. They've got nothing. We'll talk more about that. Take more phone calls coming up. 860-522-9842. We're going to the BPS Lawyers Traffic Center. Good afternoon, Mark Christopher. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.